My professional field is in biology and medicine, specifically in cancer, and more specifically in the biology of radiation effects and radiation as used in the treatment of cancer. I will not tell you what cancer is because I do not know. I don't know of anyone that knows what cancer is, but we can talk about cancer in operational terms in respect of its behavior. And that's the approach that I shall take. I don't mind interruptions, and if any of you wish to interrupt with a question, please just raise your hand and I will try to recognize you. And I think this can be very informal. If this represents the organism that is you or me, and this surface here, here is a hollow organ, the stomach, the bowel, or something else, a solid organ, the liver. Cancer may commence at any of these sites. Externally, on the skin, one could consider it external here on the surface of a hollow organ, or within a solid organ, let us say, as the liver. As the cancer develops, it will invade and destroy. Or it may spread to other parts. Another organ here. Here, and the secondary, this we will call the primary, the site of origin, and these, the secondaries to which the cancer has spread, either directly or carried by some means in the body, and to call these the secondary cancers, or more commonly, the term used is metastasis, I better write it now. Metastasis. In the time frame and the development of cancer, let me draw another graphic model. If this now is time, and I will not define time in terms of days, weeks, or months, just to develop a conceptual idea of the time frame. Here somewhere is the inception of cancer. At some time, if this is the growth of cancer in time, at some time here, it will be recognized. Something will happen to us. We have found a lump. We've bled. Something else, I don't know. But it will be recognized, and probably the time interval here to diagnosis, in terms of this overall time from inception to recognition, will be relatively short, and the time from diagnosis to treatment will probably even be shorter. So we can consider in the time frame diagnosis and treatment as more or less simultaneous. Now what happens in terms of the simple graphic model if cancer is not treated? At some time, there will be what we can call, in general terms, a lethal mass of tumor. If nothing happens here at recognition and at treatment, cancer obviously will continue to develop until here, at some time, a lethal mass has been obtained. let's call that little t one here. If, however, at this point, cancer is treated, and let's say it is, it can be excised surgically, and if having developed to that stage, it is removed, it may be cured. What do we mean by cure? I think that has to be defined. Again, cure of cancer has to be defined in operational and not absolute terms. What I mean by operational here is this. Again, a graphic model. And again, within the time frame. The group of us here has a certain mortality expectation that can be defined. I can't define it, but the people in the insurance companies can define it for the whole group. And if this represents the probability of survival, 100% here, time whatever this is today, time zero, this group will be dying something like this. So that there is a 50% chance here that any one of us will live out this time span. I can't say that you will conform with that pattern. But as a generality, I can say that your probability of conforming with this pattern, let's say, is 50%. Now, with cancer, the group here with a certain kind of cancer, the mortality experience will be, let's say, this, coming down rather rapidly, and then attaining the same slope as the total population represented by this group. If this line then is projected backwards, wherever that hits there, around, say, 70%, one can say that cancers represented by this group of cancers has a 70% probability of being cured. This is very much different from saying, doctor, am I going to be cured? The doctor can't say. Doctor can say, well, within the experience of this kind of cancer is that there is a 70% probability, an 80% probability, a 20% probability, maybe even a zero probability. But there can be no absolute designation. So when I speak of cure, it is within that kind of time and statistical frame. We go back to the other model. Now suppose that treatment, whatever it is, does not cure. It gets rid of some of the mass, and perhaps the cancer continues to grow. Again, the same way, up again until it's recognized that things are not perfect, cure has not been attained. Again, the recognition, the diagnosis, and possible treatment. The probability of the second treatment will cure is poor. But if this represents the time span with cancer without treatment, you see that having been treated here, but not cured, and coming on, the time span has been extended to T1 plus T2. So there has been an effective treatment in terms of life expectancy. Here again, if treatment has failed, and up again, recognition, diagnosis, perhaps even treatment again, then there still is possibly a little extension of time. And as this process goes on, the probability that this will be, is that this will become less and less. Commonly today, the initial treatment here will be either surgical or radiation treatment. At the second stage, if cure has not been effected, surgery is probably unlikely. Radiation is probably very likely. Chemotherapy is a possibility. As we extend time out here, chemotherapy becomes probably the major possibility, and the probability of very much further extension of life is diminished.
Doctor, do you
have any questions about
behavior?
These behavior definitions in the end, and in very general terms, yes?
Are you going to get later to more of a description of radiation, chemotherapy, cobalt treatment?
We can. I will. Let's say we will interrupt this with 15 or 20 minutes to go. I will continue in the structured
manner. Okay.
Sense. But do feel free to interrupt. People ask me, well, why aren't we making more progress in cancer, in the control of cancer? My answer is, I have been now almost 50 years looking at cancer. And when you consider 50 years in the life of man, that's an infinitesimal time. Nothing. And so far as we know, cancer has always been with man. So let me talk about what has happened just in one professional lifetime. Let us consider first the things that have indirectly affected the picture of cancer today. Number one has been the control of other diseases. Pneumonia doesn't kill anymore. The lobar pneumonia that carried off old people, we no longer see. It is controlled. The diseases that carried off children, I would get in my youth in medicine, in the emergency room ambulance out at the city hospital, go where a diphtheria case was suffocating from obstruction of the windpipe in order to put a tube in. Tuberculosis. I spent a lot of time on tuberculosis wards, seeing young people drowning in their own blood. Does anybody know anybody today with tuberculosis? I don't. Poliomyelitis. So,
in right here.
The second cause of death in childhood today is cancer, the first being accidents. This change has happened in my professional lifetime. In my professional lifetime, blood replacement, what has happened indirectly in terms of cancer, the safety of surgery, in terms of control of the surgical infection, antibiotics, accessibility and ease of replacement of blood, safe anesthesia, all these things have very much affected the outlook for cancer because it has extended the capabilities of the surgeon. In my own field, when I started, there were exposed high voltage wires leading to relatively simple x-ray tubes with very limited capability for treatment to today we're talking about, commonly talking about energies of 10, 20 million volts of acceleration energy for the creation of X-rays. And the cobalt machine, the development of the cobalt machine, which incidentally is a direct byproduct of the nuclear energy industry and nuclear war, if you will, direct byproduct. But what it has given us in terms of cancer is a global capability in undeveloped countries. I mean by global capability for undeveloped countries to treat cancer with modern tools. Diagnostic capability has increased tremendously. In terms of specific cancers, what is the picture today? The most common cancer is cancer of the bowel, because it is it occurs with almost equal frequency in both male and female. The capability of diagnosing it today is very great, and the capability of the surgeon to deal with it because of these other factors is also great. And the outlook for it today is very much different from what it was just in my professional lifetime. Hodgkin's disease, a disease largely of young adults, but not limited certainly to young adults, as I learned this morning, is now curable in perhaps 60% of patients presenting with Hodgkin's disease. This has happened wholly within my professional life. As I was growing up in the profession, the diagnosis of Hodgkin's disease was essentially the death warrant. That is no longer the case today. You women are particularly fortunate through the development of the pap smear and the protection which it affords. There is no need today to die of cancer in the uterine cervix. Breast cancer remains a problem. However, the outlook for breast cancer, because of early diagnosis, because it's relatively simple to recognize, has also changed considerably. And there again, you can do a great deal for yourselves in terms of recognition. Skin cancer, there's hardly any excuse for a death from skin cancer today. And yet again, in my own professional lifetime, I can remember faces, let's say lost, from skin cancer. There are some cancers in which little or no progress has been made. One is brain cancer. Brain cancer does not metastasize. The common brain cancer does not metastasize. It destroys simply by destroying the brain. Lung cancer, there is essentially but little progress in the management of lung cancer, and so we have to think in terms of what is available for the prevention of lung cancer. And I think it is common knowledge and commonly recognized that there's a strong association between cigarette smoking and lung cancer. I don't think for 1 minute that cigarette smoking causes lung cancer, but it does something which allows lung cancer to appear. And once lung cancer has appeared, today there is it's not managed very well so far as treatment is concerned. Pancreatic cancer, we don't hear very much about pancreatic cancer, but pancreatic cancer is a relatively common cancer. It's now maybe the fifth or sixth most common cancer because it was found at autopsy. Very difficult to diagnose. Today the situation is different because of contemporary capability and diagnostic tools, notably what is known as the CAT scanner. Much attention today is given to the concept of the prevention of cancer. Now, I don't know how to prevent cancer except through these things of commonly associated things with cigarette smoking, excessive exposure to sunlight, some occupational cancers, the old occupational cancers of the dye livers and the dye cancers. A few other things, and we hear a lot about carcinogens. In my opinion, possibly even excessively in terms of our knowledge of it. For example, I read just recently about carcinogens in beer. My closely is in beer. Well, when I examined the data, the amount is so very minute that even at 6 packs a day for a lifespan, I don't really see how it could induce cancer. But again, we are dealing not with absolute phenomena, but with statistical probability. Always we are at risk, so those that do expose themselves to cigarettes have to recognize that they're exposing themselves to risk. Those that jog have to recognize that they are exposing themselves to certain risks. Those that get in the airplane today expose themselves to the possibility that they may not reach their destination alive, so that we are always exposed and we cannot avoid a certain element of exposure. Certainly it is well known that radiation itself induces cancer. And now we are discovering that, for example, in some cases of Hodgkin's disease that have been successfully treated, so far as the Hodgkin's disease is concerned with radiation, that a few now are developing cancers that can be attributed to the radiation treatment they have received. There is a certain amount of radiation to which we are unavoidably exposed, that which comes from outer space, that which exists in the rocks around us. So that all of us are at risk, and the best we can do is to develop a sense of awareness about it and a sense of confidence in dealing with it. What about research into cancer? As I see research, research is an exploration of phenomena and relationships which can be affected only when its time has come, so to speak. In other words, one cannot, in my opinion, arrive easily at the cause of cancer without knowing more about how the body control mechanisms work. We are, for example, a mass of some 10 to the 12th or 13 cells. What kind of a number is that? That's 1 with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 zeros. Something like 1 million cells. Now, to me, it does not seem strange that in 1 million cells, one or two might run amok and become cancer. It seems to me much more exceptionally that we maintain our homeostatic control mechanisms so effectively. So when we talk about research in cancer, we are talking about what happens to the cell now. And that is very difficult. And so one finds that research in cancer goes along many, many different lines. Biochemical research, what is the biochemical basis for the whole mechanism here, which gets out of whack? What about immunological phenomena? There's a lot of effort devoted to the study of immunological phenomena in relationship to cancer, but they, on the concept that cancer is foreignness in the human body. Cancer is foreign. It's easy enough for me to see how a bacterium is foreign. It's a little more difficult for me to see how a cancer cell of my own body is foreign. But nevertheless, that is an area of substantial research today. You may have heard about interferon, for example. The American Cancer Society is putting substantial resources into the study of interferon. Interferon is a biological agent derived from blood cells, and it has antiviral capability. The theory that somehow viruses are related to the induction of cancer. There is research continuously and substantially in the development of chemicals that may have specific effects on cancer. Chemotherapy, development in the biochemistry laboratory, experimentation in the experimental animal laboratory, trials, clinical trials in institutions, and the developments in chemotherapy have been very, very substantial. Chemotherapy commenced, really, one can define sharply when cancer chemotherapy commenced. It commenced right after the Second World War, when for some reason or another, a mustard compound, nitrogen mustard compound, was dumped or accidentally dumped in the waters off Italy, I think it was, and some were exposed. It was found that it had a profound effect on the blood cells, and cancer experimenters began to look at nitrogen mustards. And nitrogen mustard was the first of the effective chemical compounds against certain kinds of blood and lymphatic cancers. The best protection for each of us, I think, is this sense of awareness. If something goes wrong, investigate. About 3 months ago, the American Cancer Society published widely recommendations for individuals related to sex and to age as to how they should develop a sense of awareness, and what they should look for, and what they should expect their doctors to do. If I knew that I didn't know Holden, and I did not know there would be this kind of an opportunity, or I would have brought that material. But it is easily available from any of your local offices of the American Cancer Society, readily available, or write to New York for it. And it is very sound advice. It suggests to women what they need to do in terms of self-examination, especially the breast, in terms of regularity of pap smears. It suggests to both women and men what to do in terms of bowel signs and other possibilities. I think it is very good. It represents the state of the art. In terms now, John, of what you mentioned, let's depart from any program presentation and develop perhaps just a dialogue with whomever wants to speak or ask. And I think perhaps you have something specifically in mind.
Yeah, my father has the Hodgkin's disease. We talked this morning, that's the reference. He's 82, so he's the other end
he's
of the
spectrum.
He's a little
bit out of the pattern.
Yeah.
He's out of the pattern.
And he did have the bowel cancer in 1949, and apparently that one was a cure. At least we celebrated his 5th birthday from that one, and now recently the 30th birthday from that one. All right. But the doctor at Johns Hopkins talked either radiation or chemotherapy or both, and said that he and 13 other people would sit down on a Thursday and decide on the basis of what they found in the way of the Hodgkin's disease in his body and his age and loss of weight and some other things. They would get the treatment and decide on that. And so I'm kind of curious as to the difference between radiation and chemotherapy and I guess that's it. And where the cobalt comes in, they're just new terms for me.
13 people is a big committee, but a lot of medical decisions are made today by committees, and I think that's appropriate too, because which is better? One person that knows a little bit about everything, or a number of people that are experts in a particular field sitting down together to make a decision. As long as that decision is just simply, it is not just simply something, well, okay, we all agree on that, we just go ahead and that. Not that kind of decision. I mean, a real sound basis, on a sound basis, basic decision. Now, as to the specific question, cobalt or chemotherapy? Hodgkin's disease manifests itself locally, both locally and systemically. So then, if commonly it presents as a mass in the neck locally, and if then a number of diagnostic tests are run through and nothing positive elsewhere is demonstrated, obviously this lends itself very readily to treatment and effective treatment by radiation. The risk is, of course, that despite the fact that all the diagnostic tests have been performed, they haven't picked up the Hodgkin's disease down here. Chemotherapy being given here in the mouth and distributed here willy-nilly reaches the Hodgkin's disease here, reaches the Hodgkin's disease here, it reaches the liver here, reaches the stomach here, and other places makes the patient sick, but it may also be very effective treatment against the Hodgkin's disease. So I can't say specifically that it ought to be one or the other, and one will find in institutions today that the first approach may be chemotherapy, generally not for strictly very localized Hodgkin's disease, or maybe radiotherapy, certainly if it is localized Hodgkin's disease, or maybe a combination of both. Thinking along such lines as this, well, this is the big mass. This can be handled, we know, effectively by radiotherapy. It possibly is too big for chemotherapy, but we will do chemotherapy because there may be, we know that there is something here, or there may be something. So, whatever decision is taken is probably a rational and reasonable and appropriate decision.
The chemotherapy is medication that you take orally?
Or intravenous.
Or intravenous.
In essence, what really happens? What is going on in chemotherapy?
Two things. Chemotherapy can be looked upon, in one instance, simply as a poison, a non-specific poison, with cancer cells, certain cancer cells, more susceptible to that poison than other body cells, or alternatively, cancer cells and normal cells susceptible alike, but with a greater repair potentiality than the normal cells. So it can be looked upon, number one, as a non-specific poison. Number two, to a more limited extent, as specifically as interfering with specific biochemical pathways. Cells have to have energy, have nutrition. They convert foodstuffs, whatever they are, into energy, expel the waste through biochemical processes. If those biochemical processes are more or less specific for a cancer cell, and they're not very specific for cancer cells, there are a few specific biochemical pathways. If they can be interfered with by an agent, then that may have a selective effect on the cancer cell. Well, two things, poison or interference with biochemical pathways, and a third one, which we would consider together with chemotherapy, but somewhat different from chemotherapy, the hormones. The hormones that play a very important role in the control process of what I would call the cybernetics of the human organism, communication and control network. If I reach out my hand to grasp this piece of chalk, it's a very complex operation, for example, in the control mechanisms, and what keeps my body functioning, these control mechanisms can be interfered with, and some cancers are susceptible to interference by hormones.
Dr. Anders, why does the sum of the cells then not, I mean, it affects the cancer cells, it must also affect the normal cells, and what risk you take in chemotherapy, and also would you speak to the use of marijuana and chemotherapy?
Now, if you mean marijuana in terms of a specific anti-cancer effect, I don't know that.
No, I mean in reducing the untoward symptoms that you have by taking the chemotherapy. I've read that a lot of people do that. It keeps them from getting nauseated. And
I think that has been allowed legally in some places. I know nothing about it through personal experience. I know only that it has been allowed in some legally in some places, and it's probably not, perhaps not inappropriate. I'm not sure myself that it's appropriate, but it's something that could be investigated. Chemotherapy does have a commonly has an upsetting effect on the gastrointestinal tract. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea are quite common with chemotherapy. Probably for the reason that the cells of the alimentary tract are very susceptible to a variety of agents. You know that they're susceptible to a variety of agents. Drink the water running off the glaciers and the glacier milk. You know, I assure you, something will happen to you for a little while. Go to Mexico and find out how susceptible the tract is to other things. But not surprising that it will be sensitive. Plus the fact that the turnover of cells in the alimentary tract is very, very, very fast. You're turning over cells every day in the alimentary tract, so that they quickly take up all kinds of things and reach their maturity and it's left off.
Is chemotherapy a generic term, and are there different kinds of chemical makeups depending upon the type of cancer that's being treated?
Yes, there's some specificity. Some specificity. Chemotherapy is a general term for drug therapy. Now, the chemicals used today in chemotherapy are relatively simple, relatively simple molecules, compared with many of the complex drugs and synthetic drugs. And it's a term which arose not because there's anything very specific or different about chemotherapy from, let's say, drug treatment or something else, but to identify, I think, the cancer. Hormonal treatment often is considered as part of chemotherapy. I wouldn't consider it something myself, because I consider the mechanism different from poisons or interference with biochemical pathways. Hormones interfere with the control of communication network.
Could you give some examples of different kinds of chemicals that might be?
Nitrogen mustard, commonly Hodgkin's disease, or some derivative. Breast breast cancers, and there's a group of compounds called the alkylating agents, of which nitrogen mustard is one. These alkylating agents form complexes with the DNA of cells. And so there's a whole group of alkylating agents which are used for a variety of cancers. There are agents of the methotrexate variety which interfere with specific biochemical pathways, and again used for a variety of cancers. The fluorouracils identified with certain components of the DNA and interfere with synthesis of important components of the cells. Yes?
I recently lost, 3 years ago, more or less a stepmother with cancer, and then just en route to Holden, her daughter, or stepsister of mine, died. Now they both, it was female and it was terminal when both were diagnosed. She took her mom back and forth to Rochester like once every 2 weeks for chemo. And her mom vomited all the way back to Mason City, about 90 miles from the clinic. And before Wave, my stepsister, we knew she had it. I said to Wave after her mom died, I said, "You think it's worth it? I mean, all the illness she went through and lack of hair and so on and so forth." And Wade says, "I don't know. Of course, there's always something you want to try and live for, and there's always a miracle." Well, before we ever had another discussion, Wade was diagnosed with cancer and now is gone. And she suffered even more than her mom. And what would happen if you did not choose to take the treatment?
The individual, herself, himself, is entitled to make a determination in conference with the doctor, in conference with family, in conference with friends, in conference with anybody. There is another matter in terms of research and in terms of support, and that is the allocation of resources by society. What is the study of this worth to society? You see, there are conflicts here. What is it worth to the individual? It may not be worth much to the individual. May be worth a great deal to society, especially in controlled trials in institutions, that individual be treated so that society can make a determination as to the usefulness. There's no way I can, that conflict cannot be, if it is a conflict, that conflict cannot be resolved here. We resolve that personally, individually, and in terms of the social structure. Yes.
I've gotten some information that cancer may be able to be treated by massive doses of vitamin C. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of that, but that has been largely rejected by the scientific community.
This was information given to me by a scientific community. It was a research team. Was it misinformation given to me by them, or was it a way for them to get money for something that was viable?
I don't think it's fair to put it quite that way. Now, money for research will be attained by those with influence. And I mean that in the best sense of the word, by the informed community, by the informed scientific community. Someone may have an idea which will not work, but nevertheless, his opinion may be very informed, and it may be justifiable to support that opinion to discover whether or not there is validity in it. Yes?
Would the suffering be worse if it is not treated than if it is treated?
I know no easy way with cancer. I know no easy way with cancer. And so there being no easy way with cancer and control, it probably is better to try to control it.
Doctor?
Yeah.
I might add, too, that I think it's a problem in society today that cancer is often synonymous with suffering. And when people think of chemotherapy, they think of ill effects, but it's not necessarily so. Individuals don't have to suffer. Many individuals do very well with very minimal side effects with chemotherapy. So it's so highly individual, we can't generalize.
That's a good comment. Perfect comment. Yes.
So far, getting back to radiation treatment, is the radiation process a selective one? Are the cancer cells, getting back to the relation to the poison, are the cancer cells more susceptible, or are you again killing good cells which can reproduce faster along with the cancer cells which are not as reproducible when you're in a radiation treatment situation?
You said in terms of a question exactly the words that I would use in answer to it. In some instances, the cells are more susceptible. I think Hodgkin's disease is a prime example of this. Whatever the basic tumor cell of Hodgkin's disease is, it does certainly seem to be more susceptible, because certainly Hodgkin's disease is controlled by doses which seem to have no great effect on the human tissue. Now, in terms of other cancers, let's see, what is an appropriate one? Cancer of the uterine cervix, which is commonly treated by radiation, application of radium, application of x-rays and cobalt. Here the cells are relatively resistant, and so the destruction is not really selective. But where it occurs, the injury to normal structures, the supporting structures, largely supporting structures, can be handled by the normal repair mechanisms of the body. So in a sense, it's selective in two ways. One is the geometry, the distribution of the radiation that is controlled to avoid, where possible, the irradiation of normal structures. Number two, by the repair capacity of normal structures. Number three, by limiting exposure to normal structures and to non-essential parts.
If surgery is used primarily and the surgeon feels that they got the entire primary mass, how often is cobalt irradiation used then as just an insurance thing?
Probably not, unless there exists a strong probability or opinion that the cancer is not removed. Probably not. Yes,
Kara. Dad, I have a question, but it's a difficult one to phrase because if I think about it, I get very angry. And it seems to me, in my experience, there is a portion of society who, when they confront cancer in a friend or a relative, frequently will hazard a diagnosis which implies that this particular friend or relative who had just experienced trauma, like death of a loved one, a divorce, all the various and sundry traumas that one can experience in a lifetime, will then develop cancer. The inference being that there's a psychodynamic aspect to the occurrence or the recognition of the illness, or that illness which enters sometime in the body becomes manifest in the body. So the implication then is that it's not something which is simply physiological in nature. And unfortunately, in my experience, it's often been the so-called religious community, quote unquote, who adopts a posture like this. And as you can see, my voice is a little shaky when I get angry, because I like to reject this notion. But what is your experience?
Where ultimate causes of something are not known, It's reasonable to speculate. When speculation is either responsible or irresponsible, it somewhat depends upon the competence of those that are speculating and upon the capacity to investigate the thesis. Now, the capacity to investigate by the scientific method the thesis that emotional disturbances cause cancer is very, very difficult. I don't know how one would undertake that. So therefore, do you accept the thesis on faith, or do you reject it? I don't know. And number two, has that thesis come from informed opinion about cancer? It's an oblique answer to the question. And yes,
I've heard recently a lot about Laetrile as a treatment. Could you comment both on what is Laetrile and also your impression of it as a treatment?
At the moment, I forget the specific history of Laetrile. You know, it's been such a so much bombast associated with it, so much emotion, prejudice, and all the rest. But essentially, it's an extract of the almond. And was thought to have some cancer therapeutic properties. And it is thought largely by the scientific community that it has been adequately investigated and that it has no merit. On the other hand, the pressure from other elements of society has been so great that I think again, I'm not certain of my grounds on this, that the Cancer Institute may have set up a trial of some sort, finally to lay the matter to rest or to establish the worthlessness of it. The general view of the scientific community is that it's worthless. Yeah?
I've heard that people who live in societies where they get Laetrile in their diet naturally have less cancer than people who don't have a great deal of Laetrile in their diet. Do you know anything more about that?
Well, if you know that, I don't know it. And if this were so, I would suppose that would be pretty general knowledge. And it would be something that could be investigated by scientific method. Now, if there are communities that have a lot of Laetrile in their diet, I don't know. What are those communities?
Well, the communities are mostly different countries. Different countries. I heard this from a nutritionist who really believes in Laetrile, but I don't know the facts.
Well, you know, I cannot evaluate the worth of belief in cancer treatment. I don't know how to evaluate. Too long involved in the scientific method to be able to evaluate belief in cancer treatment in terms of what happens to the corpus, not necessarily in terms of what happens to the spirit, but in terms of what happens to the corpus. No way that I can evaluate that.
In connection with what she's saying, there seems to be a body of literature now that says there is one way of looking at this, and that is by killing off cancer cells are somehow preventing their reproduction or dealing with it in that kind of way, and that the other side of that coin is giving super support to the healthy cells in the body. That's about all I know. Could you speak to that? I'm speaking on my own ignorance, that's just some total of my knowledge, but it seems it's in some way tied in with what she was saying.
I can't speak to that because I think it represents opinion only. It represents opinion only. And there's a certain each of us has a general idea of what the healthy person is, but that healthy person is yes.
This is in reference to that, not exactly what you're asking. We have a couple that comes to Holden regularly who are two of our favorite people. Hugh Davis keeps the hydros running. Hugh Davis worked on the hydrofoil for Boeing, and now in his retirement has his prime interest the hydro of Holden and Lucerne. So he's here regularly, and he has sleepless nights worrying about our hydro so we can all sleep because Hugh is managing it. Melba, 7 years ago, Mary? Yeah. 7 years ago, they discovered cancer of
melanoma.
She has within her body, somehow, within her system, that which fights it, so that her blood is being sent places all the time, and she regularly comes to the cancer research, I guess, at the University of Minnesota. Somehow, she has what they wish they could find to give other people, and it's within her own system, so she has been willing to be of whatever help she can. There, the doctor at one point, and I don't think this is different from what Kathy resents, at one time said, something really upset you in the last 3 months. I mean, it showed in the blood sample and everything else. Well, her sister had died. So that some of even the relationships of her emotional health and her ability to take on some of these times when the cancer hits. Hugh says it's unfair to me. They say she shouldn't get upset, and so we can't have good marital spats. I'm supposed to, but I mean, their relationship is part of her strength. All I was going to say, that's a long introduction, but she's a fascinating person. She decided 7 years ago, not out of any kind of school of thought here or school of thought there. She said, if my body is going to fight this, I'm at least going to be good to my body. So she is very careful about rest, exercise, food. Well, that seems to me to be a very common sense, good stewardship that all of us should do. What factor that's been, I don't know. But if you eat at their house, you will have very nutritious food, and she's carefully tried to get a diet that she said, I'm going to be as good to my body as I can be if it's going to be having this fight, and that's now 7 years ago. So
I should like to submit that what you have said is that we can't define what is happening in you, but we are studying.
Yes.
Would you like to share how the scientific community shares in what they discover? Because I think sometimes, as lay people, we think that they're keeping secrets or that one group is developing this and won't let that be known to another.
My opinion is, and my experience is, that scientific knowledge is freely shared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Freely shared. The only reason for not sharing scientific knowledge would be to control the purse somehow, that one had discovered something beneficial and one wanted to keep it for the sake of the purse. But generally, in scientific discovery, the reward is greater than what the purse would carry.
Are most cancers or all cancers lethal if untreated, or are there cancers which grow for a while and then discontinue growing? I wasn't sure from your diagram whether you were indicating that an untreated cancer means death.
Now, you will recognize, of course, that one may die with cancer, not of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that distinction,
mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, there are a few cancers, notably certain skin cancers, that seem to run an indolent course and actually heal where they have been and then progress someplace else and maybe heal over. And will probably not be lethal in terms of the life expectancy. But in general, however, the untreated cancer will be lethal if not carried on by someone else. Yes?
Obviously, there's a lot of fact and fiction about cancer from the things that have been said here. When you said you didn't think smoking caused cancer but somehow contributed to it, I read an article a couple of years ago on preventive things, and they made statements like promiscuous women and prostitutes have more cervical cancer than your average kind of woman, or maybe that's average, I don't know. And that the refined breads that we're eating in flours without the fiber, as they used to have in breads, causes more bowel cancer or contributes to it. And that the pollution in the air can be carcinogenic as far as lung cancer. Would you comment on
each and every?
Well, just in general, are these?
Number one, there is a body of informed scientific opinion that viruses may have something to do with cervix cancer, and viruses are carried and distributed by sexual intercourse. An answer to that component. It was fashionable a few years ago among physicians themselves to want to get a lot of fiber into the diet as presumably preventative of bowel cancer, because it washed out certain things in the diet that were forming nitrosourea or something other horrible in the bowel, and therefore you took a lot of fiber to get rid of it quickly. I think most have rejected that practice now. The third was
pollution in the air, or the
What about pollution in the air? Now, speak of Holden as an ecological community, and speak of my community, Washington D.C., as a technological community. And the conflict between the two, remember this, that without the technological community, we would not have some of the things about which I've been speaking today. Without the ecological community, we would not have the sense of awareness in the technological community of the problems we have. And as the theme of Holden this week is, with good courage or whatever, take the ecological community out to your technological community and share it and live together, because certainly you cannot deny the technological community any more than you want to deny the spiritual and ecological community of Holden. You have to live together, and surely have to take care of planet Earth.